coordinator for this group. I'm leaning forward. I want to thank Judith, Art, and Nielsen for coming, because there were 13 people here until you came. So thank you.
This is delightful. As we go along, name only is fine. Yeah. Stepping stone.
Hi, I'm Susan DeGenerin.
My name is Margot Pedrick.
Marty Miller.
I'm Richard Eric. Eric Meyer.
Carol Yanda.
Simran.
Judith.
Trudy Wayne.
Barbara Schmeller.
Tim Fisher.
Marilyn Laney.
J.D. Weiss.
Trudy Lyford.
Who remembers the topic? Somewhat?
The power and dignity of meekness.
Yeah. But to know, it begins with to know what is sufficient. To know what is sufficient. The power and dignity of meek. The first part of it has to do with the word that, the Tibetan word that is translated as meek. Chokshe. Chokshe. So that means to know. She is to know, and chok means what is sufficient. So inherent in the word meek in Tibetan is this indication of how we might access and manifest one of the dignities of Shambhala. And the dignity of meek is really the ground of all, any spiritual path, you could say, has to begin with meek. Quality of meekness, or knowing what is sufficient. It's the also the basis of any kind of activity we might want to engage as a warrior. So even though this might be very familiar to a number of you, I find it helpful to go back and look at it perhaps in a fresh way, and also to bring it back home into current reality. So I wanted to begin by just reading something that, when I say the name Dorje Drodol, do you all know who that is? No? Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche? Okay. He just had a number of names and manifestations, and one is that. So he was speaking about this dignity of meek, and he begins by talking more about what he observed in what he called the setting sun world. The world that lacked a certain kind of basic dignity. And he said, we usually just put up with ourselves. From the minute we get up from our beds and brush our teeth and take a shower, we feel so critical of ourselves. We don't actually respect ourselves at all. Self-respect is a very rare occurrence in the setting sun world. There's an interesting beginning to our conversation. Now, as you know, this sort of setting sun world is also part of our world that we have the aspiration to live and move through the world with a sense of genuineness and warriorship, however we understand that at any given time. But we still feel the pull back to certain kinds of habits. And one might be that one we just slide into so easily of not respecting ourselves and wanting something else, wanting it to be another way. So the ground of knowing what is sufficient and the ground and the power of meekness comes from this sense of worthiness, which is part of the definition of basic goodness, a sense of worthiness. That could be an attitude in your meditation. The attitude that I am basically worthy. If we look at basic goodness as 0 and 1, as the Sakyong has, then we have a little bit of clue again about why this basic goodness thing is so important. The basic, he said, is zero. And if you just look at the zero, the symbol zero, you have completeness, right? You have a circle. You have openness, and you have accommodation. Anything that is to follow 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 comes from this ground zero. So you could say there's a ground zero of our being. It's a good one. It's basic accommodation. This goes through to the highest teachings of Tibetan Buddhism and Shambhala Buddhism. This basic accommodation. So because we are joining the highest vision with the very minutest aspect of our daily life, that means it has to be a part of it. This zero, this basicness, this accommodation. And then we have one. Zero and one. I don't know if you've ever thought of basic goodness this way, but it's been taught this way. Zero and one. So one is the prime number, right? That's a good one, huh? Nothing argues with one.
Number one.
And one is associated also with this sense of completeness. Or no, completeness is this, more worthiness. So it's a different flavor, complete and worthy. Sakyong, the current head of Shambhala, speaks a lot about this. Over and over and over again, you'll hear him talk about this. It made me think about why we hear it over and over again. And I think partly because when we get up out of bed and take a shower and move through our day, that inner critic can be quite strong, or it can be sneaking around in our mind stream and stealing our mind away, as we say, before we know it.
You know what's interesting about number one, too?
What?
It's the uprightness, the whole, just the shape of it is very, you know.
This is great.
Dignified.
Okay. Dignified. We're doing really well. Okay. So the basic message that I think we're trying to bring deep into our being, because then it will resonate with what is true, is that being human is worthy of complete respect. So the teachings say, well, when we're in that sending sun mentality, there seems to be a lack of respect. And it doesn't take much for us to look around and see how disrespecting one's own being and the others around them and the planet and society happens pretty easily. Sometimes it's so subtle we don't pick it up. So I emphasized the posture because the quality of meek, and it's associated with a tiger, some of you know, has a lot to do with the posture in our meditation practice, taking a good posture. Now, do you remember in this meditation session, when you went through the body, journeyed through the body, and then did your best to really come into the posture meditation, and you checked your attitude, then what happened to thoughts when they came up? Did the posture have some influence on the thoughts? Or conversely, the thoughts on the posture? Did you notice? This is advanced practice, actually.
I noticed that the thoughts were kind of quicker to come and go.
Uh-huh.
They didn't sort of hang around, you know, smoke a cigarette. You know, they were more kind of came in my
okay.
readily. It wasn't like that the whole time, but I just noticed when I was feeling pretty upright.
And I noticed that I didn't have as many thoughts right away. That something about settling in, it felt relaxed and a little bit more like a flow. And the thoughts just were sort of bobbling along, so they weren't really doing much.
We got the blip and the bobble going on. Come meditate with us. Blip bobble. That's another quality. I'm going to end up with a song by the end of the evening.
Blip bobble song. For me, it was grounded.
Mm-hmm.
I finally come to the point where I'm not in pain when I'm sitting, which is really great.
Mm-hmm.
And I always imagine, the sense of mountain
mm-hmm.
and groundedness.
Okay.
And that, I think, did actually contribute to the relaxation.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Boy, if we're actually connected to Earth, then some part of the human body, mind-body system, starts to relax. When we're not connected to Earth, agitation is usually occurring, both mental agitation and physical agitation.
Hmm.
So in the most subtle level of suffering is that quality of, not being grounded, that, and then it becomes a little self-occupied, right? Or a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. So grounding. Flat bottom thoughts is an expression that's used in this tradition, having flat bottom thoughts. What else about being in the body and really taking the time to feel your posture? How did you notice that affecting the thoughts that pass through your awareness? Any other kinds of comments?
Well, I noticed that, in that posture where your heart is so open and exposed, that, that was, I think, how that sort of awareness of that sadness came up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
I noticed that with the uprightness, it is definitely a feeling of earth, but there's also the feeling of spaciousness.
Yes.
And that,
yes.
That keeps the thoughts less solid.
Yes.
And when, either way, if I start grabbing hold of those thoughts, I feel my body going this way,
mm-hmm.
or if I just relax in a setting sun way,
mm-hmm.
then the thoughts are more solid.
Yes.
So they're very tied together.
Yes.
Sitting here.
It would be a great experiment to spend 20 minutes like this and to watch your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then to spend the next 20 minutes like this. And it's worthwhile to do some of these things, even though you think, to really get to know why we sit upright. And then what you're pointing to, what JD just pointed to, was that when that mindfulness of the posture is there, it cannot be divorced from a generalized awareness. You can't just separate it, right? It's just there, it happens somehow in this posture. So if you put those two together, you're in the posture as it is, and there's a general sense of awareness. In Shambhala, we call that healthiness. Freedom from sickness. Now, this is a very interesting topic because you might have the physical sickness, but you can access some freedom from that or some fundamental healthiness by just taking this posture. You could say the posture also moves us away from complaint. There's so much in the posture. This is the ground. This is the ground. The simplicity of just being on your seat. Then we move out into our life, and you could say that then we have the posture of life as our path. Now, when we're bumping into the world of others and things, aggression and desire seem to pop right in, right? I don't know what kind of noise they would make. Bam. Aggression and desire makes it very hard for us to have that sense of knowing what is sufficient, because then we know what might be more interesting, what might make us feel more complete or worthy. It's moving away from that sense of confidence that comes from just being here. This is enough. This moment, this body, this emotion, is enough. But then we start to move. Now, on the cushion is hard enough, but then we move out into our world. It becomes very hard to maintain the posture of life. So one of the key things in our training that should be brought back over and over again, if it hasn't already in your life, is to approach some of your activities slowly and methodically. What is one of those activities that you approach slowly and methodically? None. Anything?
Eating.
Brushing your teeth.
Yeah.
Combing your hair. Uh-huh. It's incredible. We have two eyes that are amazing, and ears that hear. The body, if you look at this body, it's golden, it's treasure, and we should take care of it as best we can. It lasts 70, 80, 90 years. And it's amazing.
Yes. Now, what attitude are you hearing coming out of that voice?
Appreciation.
Amazement.
Right. This is the field of meekness. Now, meekness sometimes sounds like it's dampened down, but the expression and the quality of it came through Richard's voice is also the voice of meekness. That simple yet deep access to something as precious as the human body. But we move out into our life easily forgotten, right? Easily forgotten. So how do we know what is sufficient? How do we feel that quality of contentment as you move out into your world? So one thing is to practice over and over again the slowness that is always at the ground. Just like Trudy was saying, I have a good posture. Then if you slow down and go through it methodically, you may discover something new, because whatever you discover is fresh. It's not the posture you had when you practiced this morning. So that's part of the power and dignity of meek. So you make your whole life an expression of that posture, the posture of meditation carried forward, and the attitude of saying, accommodation complete, worthy. Now, what's interesting then, I also thought, when people can use this as, I'm number one, not what we're talking about. How do you get from I'm number one to the kind of one we talk about in terms of worthiness? Eric, do you have a sense of that?
Well, what I was thinking of is a really worldly example of like sending an email. Like you receive an email where someone has threatened you in some way, then your impulse is to like lash out at them. And if you instead just stop and breathe for a little while, then it might not be necessary to reply at all, or you might reply differently. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I was thinking of the question that you asked about how do you get from I'm number one to, you know, the one that you're referring to.
Yes.
And, you know, I feel pretty close personal experience of that. I think it's about connection with others and feeling a sense of compassion.
If I could just follow up.
Sure.
In my email context, then, it's like your immediate reaction is to say, this is a situation with a winner and a loser. I want to win. But if you can just get a little bit more spaciousness, then you don't have to have that defensiveness or aggression.
Yes. And do you know how that's described in the tiger?
No.
That the tiger leaves behind gain victory and good fame.
Say that again.
The tiger leaves behind gain, victory, and good fame. So we're talking about the ground of spiritual path, the ground of warriorship is not about competition, gain, not caught in the worldly situation of winning and losing, as you said there, being victorious in that relative sense, that conventional sense. Looking for confirmation. So if we felt sufficient, and we felt not just this body is sufficient, or little complaints about the body all the time, right? Mm-hmm. And Richard is perfect. He's like, we've ears and his fat eyes. And there's probably one thing about your body that you could just be fine with as it is. You don't, no complaint, right? If it's your pinky, it's your pinky, right? Mm-hmm. And to start to relate that to contentment, yeah? So you start to feel that, and you notice when you stray from that. When those little things that you're trying to get a little bit something out of this situation. I just want a little bit more confirmation. Or the opposite, that criticism, and then you've lost your worthiness. This is why practicing this quality, which in Shambhala we're calling meekness, is so important. Because spinning out of that one little moment where you are going for gain or you're looking for confirmation, then whole worlds unfurl. And we find ourselves losing some of that ground that allows us to relax, which was what I heard quite a few of you say.
I wanted to say that Dan and I have been through a very difficult time in a very setting sun kind of situation. And the whole time, or at least as much as we could muster, we tried to do it with some consciousness about what we were really after, which wasn't necessarily to win, although the setup is kind of set up like that. And the other thing I wanted to say is in the midst of this, I was meditating and trying to get in touch with my feelings. And of course, there was this tremendous anxiousness and fear was there. But when I stayed with it, the amazing thing under it was contentment, which surprised the hell out of me. So I think my experience of that is that they could live together, actually. That just because anxiety is like this doesn't mean it's the sum total of how I'm feeling. Hmm.
Yes, and that anxiety can be completely accommodated.
So, say more about that accommodation. I don't fully understand that.
Who's going to say something more about accommodation? I'm looking for a face that looks like.
Exactly.
Are you about to say something?
Yeah. I think it's. We just think it's not accommodated, but it really is just a reflection of this present situation. It's really. It's a lot more okay than. You were alluding to that. If you explored, there was more to it, and it's just whatever's happened has brought that up, and it's reflected. And if you just see it for what it is, it can move, and it will move. And if we don't get too caught up in it, but even if you do, it's just a reflection of. What's happening right now.
So that's an attitude.
Yes, and after things have settled, I still feel that there's still a sort of a, you know, anxious...
And can that be a part of this circle? If we start to exclude anything from our path, then we're moving away from contentment. We're moving away from the power and dignity of our own life, right? Because we're excluding. So we're including. It's inclusive. Mm-hmm. Circle is good in that way. It's all inclusive.
10th, could it be also, let's see, trying to formulate my question here, but I'm heartened by what seems to be a growing willingness to talk about shame culturally, mm-hmm. Brene Brown's work and Byron.
And Katie?
Katie.
Okay, the soul without shame is the current one that I'm familiar with a little bit. So I'm wondering if, in that accommodation, if it's recognizing what wants to come in to obstruct, deflect, the truer experience, for instance, if we're feeling embarrassed, and so we want to blame something out here, feeling embarrassed, to be willing to go under that embarrassment and recognize that something triggered a feeling of shame.
Yes.
And then to not be afraid of that feeling,
right?
And to go the language and be lean into it, I guess, in trusting that accommodation.
Yes.
To be with it, not be afraid of it.
Yes. Yes. Can I comment on the way you just expressed all of that? Was with very slow and careful words that seemed to be coming up through a felt experience. And that is meek. And that's how things can be healed. The other quality of meek is that meekness only survives with a friendly, in that self-friendliness. So that's why when aggression and desire come up, then we're being challenged. Those are the moments that we get to learn about meek, actually, because they bring us away from that and we start to feel agitation. So anything can come up in the environment. This is the image of a tiger walking through the jungle. So we have everyday life as our jungle and the inner jungle, right? Where shame and fear and hatred and all of these things, sadness exist, right? So how do you walk through inner or outer jungle slowly and mindfully? You're not just going to go, oh, it's shame. Oh, ah, ooh. You know, I'm going to get busy. But we do. We have for years, usually. Be like me. So the power of really taking the time and not separating from, which is another aspect of meek, is that we're moving away from that basic self-aggression where you separate yourself from inner environment, external environment. Yeah, it's a very powerful practice.
And I was thinking of, Barbara, what you were telling me about with your experience. And this is clearly from the outside looking in, that it seems to me that the accommodation as you've moved through this is not that there might not have been some shame around it, but that it's that allowing it, whatever it is, allowing it, somehow trusting them, under which you express so well about what you experienced in terms of weight, the ground of this experience is not that chain.
I had a question, and just thinking about what is being discussed here, and I'm not sure how it interacts with the what we're talking about now with the meekness, but for me, that type of work is always just associated. The thing that helps me the most is dropping the object. And how does that relate here?
You'll have to say more, maybe for the benefit of everybody, you can say some more.
We're having a strong feeling of anxiousness or shame, and I have found that if I can drop the object of that feeling, the person that's causing it, what I did, what somebody else is doing to me, and then I can feel, I can own my feeling. Whose feeling is it? It's mine. And I can feel a feeling without the discursiveness and the buildup of involving somebody else or something else, and then I'm truly feeling the feeling. Mm-hmm. And then I see the feeling for what it is, and it's really not going to kill me, it's not solid, it can move through me, or and so mm-hmm. I guess what I'm saying is that is a technique mm-hmm. of
yes.
being meek, maybe to see.
Yes, it's a technique all along the path of learning what to let go of, to know what to let go of. So in that case, you let go of all of, you said the object, so that wasn't completely clear to me, but then you said the whole story, and it usually involves other. And if you bring it back home, as we're saying, then we learn in the first dignity that we become self-sufficient in the sense that our path resides here. And the so-called solutions, in the meantime, they feel like solutions, but all things resolve into that attitude of trusting basic goodness. But in the meantime, we just stay with it, stay with this staying power of the tiger. The tiger knows when doing nothing is the most important thing and the kindest thing. That's what the tiger gets to know. So that might be true when there's a big emotional upheaval in the jungle.
Yeah.
So not looking for prey. That person. Not that kind of tiger.
Not that kind of tiger. So I don't want to ruin the nice, meek feeling we have here, but in, for me, I do experience a little bit of schizophrenia in a way, because, you know, when I am going into, it's about integrating into life, so mm-hmm. sometimes my work especially just feels like a whirlwind of aggression, gain, goals, blaming, shaming, and recently I've just gotten so caught up in it, and you said something a little earlier about, you know, not separating from. So of course my strategy is to separate from that at the end of the day by, I would like to say, by sitting, but that's not what I do. There's other things I do to separate from that, and of course that is not working as a strategy.
Let me ask you, and if you have something similar in your life where you feel that you're getting hooked in, mm-hmm. Everybody can reflect, do you have a sense of what you can let go of? Let's start with the letting go part
mm-hmm.
in the middle of your work day. How can you not separate, but what could you let go of and still stay fully present?
Well, the thing that I'm most aware of that's, I don't know how to answer that, but to say what's most challenging for me is to not take it as an affront to my own sufficiency.
Mm-hmm. To one.
Because that's what a lot of the amping up comes from.
Uh-huh.
Somehow in myself,
yes.
I have this interpretation that
yes.
I yeah. am less than.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's why using meditation and reflecting and contemplating on this kind of stuff is so important.
Yeah.
And then related to what JD said, I'll use another phrase that Sakyong uses associated with meek. He says, unchecked discursiveness weakens our wind horse. So this is related to the practice of meek.
Yeah.
So unchecked discursiveness. So that's why mindfulness is never going to go away as it's an inner attitude of practice, right? Because especially in the kind of situation you're describing, if we look closely, our mind has been stolen away.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then you go home and you try to separate because you're trying to separate from the part that, you know, that you got the discursiveness that was not, you know, wasn't noticed, and then it leaves a hangover.
Yeah, and I work out of my home, so there's it's even harder to separate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then, if you can bring back the kinds of slow activities mm-hmm. of just one mm-hmm. meal, one bite, even sometimes that's all. Or I had a day today that was kind of busy, and I could tell underneath that there was one of this sort of like that underlying. There's got to be something that'll make me feel different feeling, mm-hmm. you know that one? You know, and then I had this Skype call with a friend in Australia, and something about the way she started just felt like it was just asking me to be completely attentive, and my whole world shifted back into warriorship, mm-hmm. confidence, contentment, all of that. And I realize it is, some of it is the power of letting something in your world drop you down into presence.
Mm-hmm.
To be unabashedly in the present moment. There you are. To-do list right here. Phone's ringing. She says, you want to pick up the phone? And I knew, no. No. Sometimes we don't listen to that part that's saying, no. I'm not going to go run that errand, you know. So it gets to that level of detail in life, doesn't it? Where we want contentment. We want that sense of worthiness and fullness, that we're not looking for another now, another phrase that Sakyong says. We're not looking for another now. But our habits are taking us, especially the habits of desire, which are part of what the realm we live in, not just the United States, but the human realm. So how do we do that? And we have simple ways we do that. We remember with the ground, and so we're talking about that, and we read and reflect on that. And remember the path is a certain kind of posture we're taking through our life. And that posture always has attitude. And if we don't check our attitude, you know, and the fundamental one is lacking that sort of inquisitiveness. So sometimes we say that's a kind of arrogance. Mm-hmm. You already know. I already know what's going to happen here. That's mm-hmm. anti-meek. I already know. Mm-hmm. Yep. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is not meek. Mm-hmm. So everything that's in the teachings and, you know, I do recommend everything is in here. If in this short, about 2 pages on the Warrior of Meek, you're going to see that it's very rich, very, very rich, and, you know, really worthwhile contemplating, reflecting on it. So let's do, yes, please.
Time for another.
Yes, and then I'm going to have us close with a contemplation. So perfect, please. No, I'm really hoping you
want to
ask.
I want to get back to what Barbara was saying about things that come up that are negative in our lives. Like for me, I was sitting here during meditation, my back was hurting, and I was in the now, certainly, but I perseverated on how uncomfortable I was.
Uh-huh.
Or you perseverate on problems that you have with your job or whatever. So how do you accommodate all of that and recognize it as what's going on with you so that you're aware of it? But then you don't want to perseverate on something that's negative.
Well, the word perseverate probably is the key. So mm-hmm. What is perseverate? How does that go for you?
I kept thinking about my back hurts.
Unchecked discursiveness.
So then I go lie down so my back doesn't hurt? Or
you could do that. You could say that's thinking. That's a thought. What does it really feel like without the thought? Because if we can uncouple the thoughts about the sensation from the sensation, there's a whole different world. And that's a profound practice also. But you could also lie down, friendly to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
When you see yourself perseverating, and we all know this in different ways, then that's it. That's just another reminder. It does arise out of that part of us that is seeking contentment. So you could say that's grounded in a basic goodness. That is an expression of basic goodness. But we think we're going to get contentment by keep spinning, by is it going to go away now? I don't like it. I don't want it. But the more that we see that doesn't work, the more that we get a taste for either just letting it be as it is or choosing to lie down or, you know, let's say a struggle with somebody else and you're trying to let it be and trying to be the big circle and it's not working. And maybe you choose some space, some bigger space, like stepping away. Or maybe you choose silence and doing nothing. You know, it's not a formula, but if you keep some of the basic principles in mind, that every situation is arising from this basic goodness, and all human beings share this worthiness, and yet we get pulled into, you know, our desires and aggression and all that, wanting confirmation, wanting somebody else to give us a sense of our worthiness. So we know that happens. And we just have to be creative. You know, the tiger doesn't know what's going to happen in the jungle, but really curious. It takes a long time of really with your paws on the ground to know that at some point that you might be able to pounce on a situation. But that doesn't come, you know, that's usually, you know, the image of the tiger in Shambhala is about just really just appreciating each placement of the paw, each moment.
It's great to have cats in your life.
So let's close with a contemplation. So if you just... What?
I thought you were
going to
do the poem.
I don't know that I'm going to do the poem.
Okay.
Maybe afterwards I'll let Trudy read the poem. That's fine. Yeah, we're going a little over. Okay, so just closing your eyes. And without adjusting the body, tuning into the body, just noticing the posture. And see if there's one thing in your body that you can appreciate exactly as it is right now. Something that you don't have to fix. It could be an overall sense of health, or the fact that your legs work or your ears work. The fact that you have skin that's holding everything together. Just just take a moment and touch in with this aspect of your body that you don't have to struggle with. Now we're going to associate the word contentment with whatever aspect of your body that you're opening to and allowing it to be there, unfixed, exactly as it is. Contentment. So just join me in saying the word contentment and keep in mind that part of your body that you're appreciating right now. Contentment. Now opening your eyes and get a sense, you can turn your head, but just get a feeling for something in this environment that you appreciate. It could be the way the light is shining on something, or the way the air is moving, or a color. It could be anything. And really rest your awareness on that aspect of the environment that you don't have to fix. You can appreciate as it is. Notice its relationship to contentment. And let's just say the word together. Contentment. Contentment. Just as an invitation, as you consider the ending of this gathering and moving out to your car or walking and heading home, that you might aspire to be like the tiger, or to notice any aspect of your world that is associated with the contentment that is the ground of your path. And just due to time, I think we won't do the poem. But I do appreciate that you were here, genuinely, and your contributions, if not in words, in your smiling face and your eyes and your body sitting on a cushion. And yeah, I think we did it. Thank you for the conversation. Let's close with a bow.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Next week, maybe we will read. There's a poem on.